Leslie, what an exciting time we had on Clubhouse talking about glass cliffs and glass ceilings. And we talked about everything but glass.
You were breaking glass.
We were breaking glass. Yeah. Oh, I love that term. I love that. But here, let me just sort of lay out a little bit about the groundwork. And everybody knows the term glass ceiling, which was popularized in 1978. It was in a book in 1984 called The Working Woman's Report by Gay Bryant, but it really originates long before that, in 1978, when a woman gave a speech at a women's organization. Now, 78 is a long time ago. We're talking about 50 years. What's interesting is, just to talk about the glass ceiling for one last quick second, 2 years ago in 2018, they did another study. And basically what they said is that invisible barrier to women progressing to the places they should go that's been set up by a patriarchal business environment has really not changed much. That's 50 years, and so much has changed that I was surprised to hear that. So that's where glass ceiling was originally termed. And then, of course, there have things been morphed off of that. And then we moved into the glass cliff, which is what you wanted to talk about when we were doing this talk the other day. And I was like, what's a glass cliff? I had never heard of it. Had you heard of it before it was placed in front?
Yes, I had heard of the glass cliff, but it really hasn't been something that's been talked about much until actually recently. It's come up again, I think, in light of the pandemic, because it relates to women's leadership abilities. And there have been a lot of women in the spotlight during the pandemic, world leaders, in fact, that have led their countries very, very effectively.
Right, they have.
And so all of a sudden, the glass cliff has come back as a discussion point.
All right, well, define it. Can you give us in three sentences, what is a glass cliff? What's the premise of it?
I mean, it describes the idea that when a company is in trouble, a female leader is often put in charge to save it. In other words, it gives women a final chance to show that they can lead. However, when they give them that chance, they give it because the company or the organization is already broken and the chances of succeeding are low and the chances of failing are high. Thus, the glass cliff, because the idea that women will jump off the cliff in trying to save their company.
Well, or jump off the cliff to their own demise because they can't succeed. Yeah. That, I mean, to me, the glass cliff. Yeah, exactly. Now, there was much discussion, which we can't get into because this is your 15-minute Friday and we can't take more than 15 minutes. So a lot of discussion then ensued. So I felt that the talking points that should be brought up are a couple of things. There was discussion around, are women put in charge because we happen to have great qualities that work in that situation?
Well, to answer your question, I think that that is what we're seeing now, yes. But it was not admitted until really the last couple of years, where different studies have shown how effective women are in crises. You know, when you look at the glass cliff, and can I give you a few examples of women who have failed and succeeded? Some that have succeeded tremendously have been people like Anne Mulcahy, who was put in charge of Xerox when it was really close to bankruptcy. She brought it back over a period of time and has turned it into a very successful company, and actually worked with Ursula Burns, who then took over for Anne when she retired. That's one example of a woman who did not crash over the cliff. And another one is Mary Barra, who was put in charge of GM back in 2014 when GM was in a mess. And there are reasons why those women have succeeded, and there's a whole list of other women that did not succeed, which I hate to talk about those, as you know, Chris. But the reason the ones that didn't succeed didn't, quite frankly, is because they weren't actually given the time to turn the company around or given the resources.
Well, there's two other points that we want to make in this short amount of time. But the first one is, what qualifications are needed in a situation like that, which would make someone succeed? And the one that struck at me most strongly, which you need to comment on, is that there was a study done, and it turns out that women are significantly more inspirational in the workplace than men are. So they inspire people more. And when you think about a company that's deeply in trouble, and the thing that I came up with is the Trump White House in December. The morale was at an all-time low. Everyone was trying to get jobs for after the Biden administration came in. Morale was at an all-time low. That inspiration was not there to get them to focus on what Trump needed to be done in the last 30 days. So, I mean, that's a clear example that everybody can remember from recently, even though we all know where I stand on that issue. But the point of that is inspiration, empathy, communication skills, which in a company that's in trouble, those are critical. So
yes,
if we're thinking well of the men and the boards that are putting the women in these positions, because they are very male-dominated boards that are bringing women into a glass cliff. If we think about that, maybe they brought them in for that reason, but I would think not.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think that is the reason they brought them in at all. However, that is the reason, those three things, which I think go very much together, because you can only be inspirational if you're a good communicator, right?
Right.
And part of being inspirational is also being empathetic. And those are three qualities of many, I might add, that we may be talking about in another podcast, that have made women successful. Now, in the case of the women that weren't successful, that doesn't mean that they didn't have those qualities, quite frankly. It just means that perhaps they were not given the time to bring those qualities forth, or they were held back in other ways from doing that.
Well, another person in Clubhouse, you've got to join Leslie and I in Clubhouse. We're there once a week. And it's been fascinating to get some of the input of people who show up. You never know who's there and what they're into. But one of the people commented that, well, the problem is women don't negotiate well into a job. And it's funny, then someone else there said, I would like to raise my hand and say, I think women are great negotiators as long as we're not negotiating for ourselves, which I had to laugh because everybody, you know, was in agreement that we do. We are good negotiators. And what she was saying is, and this is what the part I wanted to sort of bring in front of you is, if you're going to take a glass cliff position where the odds of failing are tremendous, the only way you're going to succeed is at the negotiation table beforehand.
And that's right.
And someone asked you the question, and that's what I thought was really important for people to understand today. What should someone negotiate for when they're negotiating a position where the odds are against them? And you came up with four amazing responses to that. Can you just run through them?
Yes, the four things are, number one, you need to negotiate to have the time needed to turn the company around. And that's where a lot of women lose out, because the board doesn't give them enough time to turn the company around. Number one, time. Number two, resources. To have the resources, to be able to get the resources you need to do the job. And three is to be able to bring in the people that you need to support you. Nobody can do this alone. And it might not be, you might not be able to do it with the people that are in place right then. So you have to have the freedom to bring the right people in to make up the team that's going to turn the company around. And then lastly, just freedom overall to be able to make the decisions that need to be made and not having people second guessing you and saying no to things.
You know, what's important about the last thing that you said is really what that's around is she's saying to the board, you have to give me the power to do the job.
That's right.
And power is such a funny word when it comes to women in negotiation. You know, very rarely does someone go in and have the confidence to be able to say in a man's world, give me power. You have to turn your power over to me, board of directors, in a failing company. It's a lot to ask for. So
it is. And also a good reason why we need to have more women on boards.
Well, I hope that'll be another one of your 15-minute topics, you know. But what was interesting is we all are put in positions where, you know, companies might not be, especially after COVID. This is so timely because a lot of companies are in trouble right now.
Yes.
And there are a lot of job opportunities out there, but nothing is certain as people are making these moments in time and going in after these jobs. So those negotiation skills are also important for this time after COVID when companies are regrouping, redeveloping, redefining who they are and what they're selling and serving. So I think all of the glass cliff is not just about IBM getting a woman or Xerox or, you know, some of the companies you talked about. It's really, really timely for right now.
It's essential for right now. Companies would be smart to give women leaders who are inspirational, which is what people need right now, more than anything, the opportunity to turn things around. This is a time we truly need women leaders everywhere.
And all of this wealth of information in 15 minutes or less. Thanks, Leslie.
You're welcome.